We're studying in the 13th chapter of Joshua and ready to begin with the 15th verse. In this chapter, we have the beginning of the account of the division of the land as an inheritance among the various tribes by Joshua. But before he starts dividing the land among the tribes in the land of Canaan proper itself, we first of all have an account of the division that was given to the 2.5 tribes, Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh, on the east side of the Jordan, by Moses. And the first tribe he talks about in verse 15, "And Moses gave unto the tribe of the children of Reuben inheritance according to their families." So Reuben was the first one that was given an inheritance. He has quite a sizable inheritance. It's on the east side of the Jordan River. It's the one that's the southernmost area. It includes borders not only the Jordan River, but also some of the Salt Sea. Reuben, as you know, was the firstborn son. He should have had the birthright. He should have had the honor and the privilege and the power that went with being the firstborn son. But because of his sin, in which he committed adultery with his father's concubine, he lost his honored position. He lost his place of having the birthright. And he was not going to have as good of an inheritance, as honorable a position as some of the other tribes. And it's maybe for this reason that they elected then to be the first to settle on the east side of the Jordan River. We do not read of any high prominent person coming from the tribe of Reuben. No prince, prophet, king, or judge came from this land. This tribe was in no sense a national leader. So beginning in the 16th verse, he gives the boundaries and the possessions of this tribe. And their coast was from Aroer, that is on the bank of the river Arnon, and the city that is in the midst of the river. Now this city, Aroer, is of course in the very southernmost portion, and this Arnon River is the southern boundary of the territory. And this city was located in the midst of the length of this river. And he goes on to say, "And all the plain by Medeba, Heshbon, and all her cities that are in the plain, Dibon, and Baalmoth Baal, and Beth Baalmeon, and Jahaza, and Kedemoth, and Mepath, and Kirjath Am, Sibma, and Joash Shihar in the mount of the valley, and Beth Peor, and Ashdoth Pisgah, and Beth Jesh Shemoth, and all the cities of the plain, and all the kingdom of Sihon, king of the Amorites, which reigned in Heshbon." So we see here that this tribe had a very goodly inheritance. All these cities already established for them, the kingdom already, one that was a productive and functioning, powerful kingdom. They were able to conquer it, subdue it, and just take over all the territory of this king Sihon, all the cities of the plain, and all his kingdom. Now, we have some references in the Bible to the productivity of this area. In Isaiah 16:8-9, also in Jeremiah 48:32, he talks about how fruitful Heshbon and Sibma had been. And when this country was stricken because of their sin, then it was a noteworthy thing that these two areas of Heshbon and Sibma lost their productivity. They lost their ability to produce like they had been. So this was a fruitful, productive, very desirable land to be in. And we can see here that God did distribute to this tribe a goodly portion. Now, when he mentioned Sihon, king of the Amorites, remember we had the account of them conquering this king. It's given in Numbers 21:21. And the victory over Sihon was a very major victory. It was one of their first victories in any conquering sense. Now, it's very possible that Sihon could have been spared and his kingdom could have remained intact had he simply been courteous to this people, let them pass through when they wanted to pass through, and not been in such opposition to them. But because of his opposition, then God brought the forces of these Israelites against him, and he was defeated very soundly. And this is one of the very great victories that they accomplished. It's one of the things that gave them a lot of feeling of well-being and security, and a true realization that God was with them and God was going to give them this country. So he says, "Which whom Moses smote with the princes of Midian, Evi, Rechem, Zur, Hur, and Reba, which were dukes of Sihon, dwelling in the country." Now these princes of Midian, five are named here, they were defeated in a later battle. That's the account of which is given in Numbers 31, beginning with verse 8. And they're said to be dukes of Sihon. But they are princes of Midian, and they have to do with the rulership and the function of the country of Midian. But they were also destroyed. They were defeated. And he's the way he words it here, it's right along with King Sihon, although this was a later time that they did this. And he says they were dwelling in the country. So no doubt each one of these persons had a following, had some kind of an army, some kind of a band of defenders or a force that required some kind of conquering in order to subdue them. And so it's regarded here as an exercise of the power of the Israelite army and of God to have overcome them. Now, as he talks about conquering this country for the tribe of Reuben, he mentions also in verse 22 the overthrow of Balaam. He says, "Balaam also, the son of Beor, the soothsayer, did the children of Israel slay with the sword among them that were slain by them." This account is also mentioned in Numbers 31, beginning with verse 8. And although Balaam wasn't a threat to their not being able to have the country, he was a spiritual threat. He would have cursed them if he could. And so not only did they have to conquer this land from a physical standpoint, but they also had to conquer it from a spiritual standpoint. They had to take away, defeat those forces that were working against the will of God. And Balaam certainly represented that. And Balaam is named then among those that were slain, that were defeated in the taking of this land. And it indeed does very little good to be able to conquer a land and to possess it if you are not going to eradicate the spiritual things that are contrary to God. So that's a victory also. It's a battle. It must be fought. It must be won. And that's, I'm sure, why he so prominently puts the case of Balaam here, right along with Sihon and those princes of Midian in their defeat and conquer of the land. Verse 23, "And the border of the children of Reuben was Jordan, and the border thereof. This was the inheritance of the children of Reuben after their families, the cities, and the villages thereof." We read in Judges chapter 5, beginning with the 15th verse, that Deborah was distressed because of this border of the Jordan River separating this tribe of Reuben from the rest of the nation. And there it is stated, "For the divisions of Reuben there were great thoughts of heart. Why abodest thou among the sheepfolds to hear the bleatings of the flock? For the divisions of Reuben there were great searchings of heart." So a lot of worry was given here by Deborah as she considered the fact that this tribe was so far removed by this boundary of the Jordan River from the rest of the nation. And this tribe was so contented to just attend to the sheep and listen to the bleatings of the flock and were not interested in actively participating in the affairs of the nation, in being one of the major defenders of the nation. And consequently, we see that this was the lot of Reuben. Reuben was just kind of a hanger-on so far as being a leader or a driving force for the well-being of the nation. They were contented to just listen to the bleatings of the flock and live a contented, peaceful life rather than to become active in the political affairs of the nation. And as we said earlier, there was no great man came out of Reuben that we know of in the way of a prince or a prophet or a king or any kind of a great leader of the people. But as we think of the territory of this tribe of Reuben, we see that it was within the lot of this tribe that Mount Pisgah was located. And from the top of Mount Pisgah, Moses took his view of the earthly Canaan and took his flight to the heavenly Canaan. And also, not far from that spot, there was where Elijah crossed this Jordan River, and he was caught up to heaven in a chariot of fire. So we have some very great events happening within the boundaries of the tribe of Reuben. Also, we learn in 2 Kings 10:33 that this tribe, along with the tribe of Gad, was sorely shaken by Hazael, king of Syria. They were among the first to really be attacked here. And then they were afterwards completely dislodged and carried into captivity 20 years before the general captivity of the other 10 tribes by the king of Assyria. And that account is given in 1 Chronicles 5:26. So we have the account of the inheritance of the tribe of Reuben. Verses 24 through 28 give the account of the inheritance of the tribe of Gad. So let's read those verses. And Moses gave inheritance unto the tribe of Gad, even unto the children of Gad according to their families. And their coast was Jazer, and all the cities of Gilead, and half the land of Ammon, unto Aroer, that is before Rabath. And from Heshbon, unto Ramath-Mizpah, and Bedonim, and from Mahanaim, unto the border of Debir. And in the valley, Beth-Aram, and Beth-Nimrah, and Succoth, and Zippoth. The rest of the kingdom of Sihon, king of Heshbon, Jordan his border, even under the edge of the sea of Shinnereth, on the other side Jordan eastward. This is the inheritance of the children of Gad after their families, the cities, and their villages. The lot of this tribe of Gad lay north of Reuben's lot. The country of Gilead lay in this tribe, and as you know, this country was so famous for its balm that it was thought to be a strange thing indeed if there be no balm in Gilead. And the cities of Jabesh-Gilead and Ramoth-Gilead, which we'd often read of in the scriptures, are found in this territory. Also, Succoth and Penuel, which we read of in the story of Gideon, were in this tribe. And that forest, which is called the Wood of Ephraim, in which Absalom's rebellious army was beaten, is found in this tribe. At the time that Absalom was in that battle, his father David lay at Mahanaim, which is one of the frontier cities of this tribe. And also in that same forest, Jephthah made the slaughter of the Ephraimites. Sharon, which is famous for roses, was in this tribe. And also within the limits of this tribe lived the people called the Gadarenes that loved their swine better than their Savior, which we read about in the New Testament, which we have the account of given in Matthew 8:28-34. And by looking on the map, it is easy to see that the territory of this tribe is among the largest of the territories that were distributed among the 12 tribes. Now, beginning with the 29th verse, he gives the description of the territory allotted to the half-tribe of Manasseh on the east side of the Jordan. Verse 29, and Moses gave inheritance unto the half-tribe of Manasseh, and this was the possession of the half-tribe of the children of Manasseh by their families. And their coast was from Mahanaim, all Bashan, and all the kingdom of Og, king of Bashan, and all the towns of Jer, which are in Bashan, 70 cities. And half Gilead, and Ashtaroth, and Edrei, cities of the kingdom of Og and Bashan, were pertaining unto the children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, even to the one half of the children of Machir by their families. Now this half-tribe of Manasseh included Bashan, the kingdom of Og, and this area was famous for the best timber, for we read of the oaks of Bashan. And it was also famous for the best breed of cattle, as we read about the bulls and the rams of Bashan. This tribe, which lay north of Gad, and was also very large in territory, reached all the way up to Mount Hermon, and had in it part of Gilead. Mizpah was in this half-tribe, and Jephthah was one of its ornaments. So was Elijah, for in this tribe was Thisbe, and we read that Elijah is called the Tishbite. Jer was another descendant of this tribe, and the judge of Israel, who was named Jer, may have been his descendant, and also be a member of this tribe of Manasseh. In the edge of this tribe stood Chorazin, a city close to the Sea of Galilee, a city which was honored with Christ's wondrous works, but this city was given a terrible woe by Christ, for it did not receive Christ as it should have. So verse 32 of Joshua 14, these are the countries which Moses did distribute for inheritance in the plains of Moab on the other side of Jordan, by Jericho eastward. So this is a conclusion now of the inheritance that was given east of the Jordan. These 2.5 tribes were allowed to settle early. It was distributed by Moses. Joshua had nothing to do with it. And consequently, now that Joshua is in charge of distributing the land by lot on the other side of Jordan, he cannot change these things done by Moses. And neither can the people who live here decide that they don't want to live here now. They want to go on over into Canaan. This is a set distribution of land, and it's not going to be changed, and it's restated here emphatically that that's the way it is. Verse 33, the last verse of the chapter, but under the tribe of Levi, Moses gave not any inheritance. The Lord God of Israel was their inheritance, as he said unto them. Here we have stated twice in this chapter now that Levi does not have an inheritance like the other tribes. They're not going to be drawn out by lot and given a territory that's their territory and recognized as a tribe that inherits a certain described area. The Lord God of Israel was their inheritance, as he said unto them. So they're honored above the other tribes in one sense, in that they are to have the things of God, the things of the sacrifice, that's their inheritance. And in another sense, they are made to be deprived of having territorial limits like the other tribes were allowed to have. So it's twice mentioned here that the tribe of Levi did not have a lot entire by themselves. Now, if they had been appointed a lot like the other tribes, there's a very good chance that Moses would have served them first. Not because it was his own tribe, but because it was God's tribe. And so as he talks about the allotting of the first tribes east of the Jordan, he twice mentions the fact that the Levites did not have an inheritance like the other tribes. The Levites would be provided for in another manner. Their habitations must be scattered in all the tribes, and their maintenance would be brought out of all the other tribes. God himself was the portion both of their inheritance and of their cup. We read of this in Deuteronomy 10, verses 9, and Deuteronomy 18, verse 2. In Deuteronomy 10, verses 8 and 9, at that time the Lord separated the tribe of Levi to bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord, to stand before the Lord, to minister unto him, and to bless in his name unto this day. Wherefore Levi hath no part nor inheritance with his brethren. The Lord is his inheritance, according as the Lord thy God promised him. So Levi was to bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord. They were to stand before the Lord to minister unto him. They were to bless in his name unto this day. That was their lot. That was their job. That was their total profession. Again, in Deuteronomy 18, verses 1 and 2, the priests, the Levites, and all the tribe of Levi should have no part nor inheritance with Israel. They shall eat the offerings of the Lord made by fire, and his inheritance. Therefore shall they have no inheritance among their brethren. The Lord is their inheritance, as he has said unto them. Now, this is a very interesting thing for us to take note of, because today, during the Christian age, we find that each one who is a child of God today is also a priest. As is stated in 1 Peter, the 2nd chapter, the 5th verse, ye also, as lively stones, are built up a spiritual house and holy priesthood to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God by Jesus Christ. So then we are in the capacity of priests. And consequently, when we stop and think about what a priest does, a priest takes the things of man and offers them to God. And this includes the sacrifices that would be offered to God today. In Hebrews the 13th chapter, he names some of those sacrifices. Hebrews 13, beginning with the 15th verse, by him, therefore, let us offer the sacrifice of praise to God continually, that is, the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name, but to do good and to communicate, forget not, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. So we offer sacrifices today, and since we are priests today, our lot then is also the lot given to us by God. Our life, our inheritance, while we're here on this earth, revolves around the things that we do in praise, in worship, in adoration, and in sacrifices to God. And so to that extent, we're much like this tribe of Levi in the Old Testament. We do not have a physical amount of land given to us, or a boundary that's drawn out that says that's your inheritance, that's your lot given to you by God. No, we're not that way. Our lot, while on this earth, is a spiritual lot. And so we are dedicated to serving our God. And in the service of our God, that's where we have our territory. That's where we have our right to live, our right to be. And so in that sense, we are very similar to these priests in the Old Testament, in that we do not have a physical amount of territory like other people may have in a religious sense to be called ours, given by God. Well, that is the conclusion of the 13th chapter of Joshua. We will close at that point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying goodbye, friends.